Today, I'm going to tell you an incredible but true story. It's special because I was able to save a man's life, and that makes me feel pretty damn good. Not just because I was able to save his life, but because he helped to restore my faith in humanity. Because, unfortunately, the countless times I've done this in the past, trying to help someone, they ignore my advice and suffer the consequences. Just like the old adage, you can lead an idiot to knowledge, but you can't make him think. Hello, folks. This is Ernest. Thank you for being here. Where I send out my thoughts and observations to the entire world, usually every Monday and Friday. There are so many relationships we have in life, but I believe they broadly fall into two categories, personal and professional. And in this particular episode, I want to focus on the personal. I've been giving advice for many years, and I've helped quite a few people escape very unpleasant consequences of poor decision-making. I'm not saying my advice always works out 100% of the time, but I would give it a solid 90%. And hell, all things taken into account, I'd say that's pretty good. And why I always say I'm cheaper and more effective than therapy. So if you're having very difficult times right now, and they involve very unique circumstances, reach out. I have a very good ear for listening. Now, here's the story. A couple of days ago, a guy named Alan, not his actual name, called me up and offered to take me out to dinner, to show me his appreciation for my help and to talk about his life, which I was to find out had dramatically improved. Of course, I gladly accepted, especially since we weren't talking a steak dinner at Outback Steakhouse. Apparently, he was very appreciative. To find out why he was so appreciative, we need to go back almost a year ago. Now, I didn't know Alan at the time. It was one of those friend of a friend through the grapevine deals, which is actually very common with what I do. And I tend to be very selective of who I am willing to offer my genuine advice to. It starts out as a classic story you've probably heard many times. You have a man who has substantial money. I'm not talking in this case of hundreds of millions of dollars, but let's just say he could comfortably live the rest of his life without doing a day's work. But you'd be amazed at how quickly even large sums of money can vanish when one or more very clever grifters set their sights on you, which is exactly what happened to him. Now, this is not a case of a lonely rich guy in his 50s or 60s who went to the Philippines and thought he had found true love. We're talking about a mid-30s tech bro involving two incredibly beautiful identical twin sisters here in the good old USA. Professional grifters who knew the American legal system very well and how to separate guys like Alan from their money very quickly. This trap for Alan was going to be far from easy to escape. Now, this guy Alan was by no means a Boy Scout, and he said that past a certain point, he knew he was, well, metaphorically swimming in some very dangerous water. But he said that was part of the thrill, enjoying what few men his age were able to. Seriously considering getting legally married to one, but being able to enjoy both of them together at the same time. And I'm not talking about them playing badminton together here. So he had his absolute fantasy fulfilled with both sisters for about a year. He was totally happy. Until what I saw as the predictable and inevitable happened. First, one became pregnant. Something he said he absolutely made clear he didn't want. And then bingo! The other sister also became prego. But that's only the beginning of the scam. Enter the Haitian half-brother, Jamon. You see, as Alan was happily doing the horizontal bop with the two incredibly beautiful identical twin sisters, those sister grifters were also very loving with their half-Haitian brother, who was very, let's just say, aware of the situation with Alan and his half-sisters, which Alan said Jamon had said he had no problem with, saying that he was an accepting and understanding brother to any lifestyle. So pretty soon, after both sisters became Prego, what an amazing coincidence, accusations of emotional and physical abuse began being reported to the local police. Now, this is something I saw coming a mile away, and of course, Alan didn't. It really amazed me, as a matter of fact, how Alan was simply not seeing where any of this was going. To me, it was like a man standing on railroad tracks with a fast-moving train heading straight for them and doing absolutely nothing to get the hell off the tracks. It wasn't until I had a good conversation with Alan that he began to fully understand that he potentially stood to lose everything he had. And I mean everything. Hook, line, and fucking sinker. And he became understandably terrified, especially when confronting the American man is always guilty of everything and anything just from a woman's accusation alone, and therefore loses everything legal system racket. A fate Johnny Depp narrowly escaped from professional grifter Amber Heard. Yes, he still lost a shitload of money, but nothing compared to what he could have lost. Regardless, a plan was needed fast. What was needed was a sample of genetic material from Jamon. But how to get it without Jamon's suspicion or even knowledge? Turns out, that wouldn't be difficult. You see, at this point, Jamon regularly visited Alan's house for dinners when he was visiting his sisters. He was a smoker, and Alan was not. All Alan ever asked Jamon to do in the past was, when he smoked, if he would just do so across the street from the house, so there would be no smoke in or near the house, which Jamon had agreed to do. But this time, when Jamon came over, after he left, I told Alan, using vinyl gloves, to collect the cigarette butts Jamon had smoked, which were now on public property, just as police are able to do. Long story short, the genetic material from those cigarette butts was Jamon's. This means that if my observations and intuition were correct, the subsequent babies which were going to be born would be substantially darker than the mother's, or Alan, who is Irish. Now, I would love to go into the hilarity of illustrating a court scene of either or both of the mothers trying to demonstrate in court how Alan owes them support for the next 18 years with babies that are very brown. But the very unfortunate current reality is that, in certain states, they don't have to. You see, the legal system has become so utterly pathetic and corrupt, especially in cases involving paternity, that in many states, even if the paternity has been definitively shown that a given man is in fact not the father of a given child, any financial agreements of support made by the potential father still have to be adhered to, regardless of any future proof of paternity. My God. And everyone's wondering why men want absolutely nothing to do with modern American women? So now we get to the even more interesting part. Now bear in mind, I'm giving you an extremely broad description of what took place. There was a hell of a lot more to this. I'm just giving you a very condensed version. After I explained everything that was going on to Alan, that these three grifters were intending to intimidate him to the point where he would simply just agree to paternity and their financial demands, which became greater and greater as time moved on. And I explained that right now we had everything in place to turn the tables. I told him to play possum, to keep acting just as he had been up to this point, as though he still had no clue of what was actually going on, and to simply play for time. To wait until 1 month before the expected time of birth, then to go on a completely different, unexpected offensive, which is exactly what he did. When that time came, remember, the grifter's goal was to get signed financial agreements of support that they had done by their own attorney. The advantage they offered Alan was that all of this could be done outside of court, and he wouldn't have to pay even more attorney's fees. Plus, the whole situation wouldn't be brought into public view, which Alan had already admitted months earlier he definitely didn't want to do. So they knew that and were taking advantage of him. It was basically a form of extortion. When the time came, I told him to release the trap. Up until that time, he had been totally financially supporting them. But he told them suddenly and unabashedly that that was going to change. He told them, specifically not mentioning any proof, that he simply had a gut feeling that the children from either sister were not his, and he was not going to support them any further or agree to sign any financial agreements. He said that he didn't want to have contact with any of them from that day forward, and if they wanted to pursue this, they could schedule to see him in court. Now, there's the kind of righteous balls you seldom see anymore. I only wish I could have been there to see the expressions on the grifters' faces. The only thing he offered them was a one-time payment to essentially end their extortion and to get them out of his life. The grifters, being totally overwhelmed by this personality flip of their possum, quickly realizing they had nothing signed by Alan and also realizing that any paternity suit, especially when the babies are quite brown, would stand about as much chance as a snowball in hell. And so they agreed to his terms. And that, my friends, is how I saved a person's life. Or, well, at least 18 years of undeserved, governmentally approved hell. So what do you think? Did I do the right thing? Or am I just a cold, heartless bastard who refuses to pay for an 18-year scam from some grifters seeking my money with governmental assistance? I'd really like to know. Until next time, this is Ernest, and that's all I've got for today.